This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know about you, Pierce, but it's been raining a lot lately. Did you get that hail that came through a couple days ago?
I sure did, as did my basement last night. Oh, yeah, that was super fun.
What happened? Standing water in your basement?
Just not standing water, no. Just stuff running in. So we got a leak in the roof somewhere. We've got like a porch off the back of our place that was trickling in pretty good. And then I thought, you know what? I should just check right down below that porch. And sure enough, it had made its way even further. So I got fans blowing. Yep. I got garbage cans everywhere. I've got towels all over my floor and the dehumidifier just going crazy. So I had a ton of fun last night.
I believe that. I can remember living in this, one of the first houses I ever bought. I ended up having like a, I don't know. There must have been a crack in the foundation because it rained really hard and just like a tsunami kept coming up and it was overwhelming the sump pump in our basement. And I literally had to sit there and put my finger under the sump pump so it would continuously run. And dude, it was a nightmare, dude. It sucked.
And those are like the situations that you really have time to contemplate things when you're just stuck there, like monitoring something.
Why me?
just waiting for it to end.
Why me? And then the other one was we started leaking downstairs in our house two days ago. And I was like, hey, why is, you know, there? Oh, it's leaking downstairs. It's leaking downstairs. And I look up and upstairs are, porch door was open, the sliding door to our back deck. And I'm like, you guys know it's monsooning out, right? Why is this door open? Oh, we forgot about it. Whatever. Like, that's an acceptable answer. It's like, it's raining. The first thing you do is go around and make sure there's no windows open. Yep. And, of course, so we had to clean up the upstairs mess and the downstairs mess. And so, it was, this rain is great because right now there's mushrooms popping out there somewhere that I'm not going to be able to find this year, but dude, we needed it. This, like the Iowa drought indicator, you live it further east in Iowa than I do, but the drought indicator has been kind of gnarly this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's getting better with all this rain.
Yeah, I was supposed to be guiding this morning, just across the river for trout. And I mean, even driving around yesterday after that first storm, everything was, I mean, a foot or more high. There was one stretch of this creek that about a month ago I was there and there was a big, I'm talking like a full size, like probably 70-year-old oak tree that had gotten snapped off in a storm, fell in, like the top branches were down in the water and it actually created like this pretty sick little trout habitat where they could kind of tuck up underneath and then also rise like in this little gap underneath the branches. That whole tree yesterday, I got in there, was going to walk up to it because I wanted to fish it and went up there. Tree's gone. So I'm like, somebody move it. What the hell's going on? And then about an hour later, go downstream and that tree had been picked up, funneled underneath this bridge and then spit back out like 250 yards downstream from it. So it was, it's just nasty. Yeah. And then the day we called off
Have you ever been caught in a flash flood?
Sort of.
Have you ever been caught in a flash flood by chance?
Not like stranded. No, I've been in some really nasty stuff down in New Zealand where they had some rock slides and monsoons and we barely made it back out through the pass that we had gone through on the South Island. But
oh, no shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was gnarly. We had a guy in front of us on a motorcycle. Yeah. It was like, did not envy that guy one bit.
Oh my God. Me and my buddy, when we were in, I think we were maybe like freshman or sophomore in high school and we every once in a while, we'd do this little walk around, like this creek, this rocky creek would wrap through our town, on the outskirts of town. So we'd start, we'd ride our bikes to one spot, and then we'd walk the creek all the way down to this park. And, you know, and then it started to rain really hard, really fast. And so we tucked ourselves underneath of this culvert that went underground, and we were just sitting there and out of the rain. And all of a sudden you could hear it coming. You could hear like the leaves and the grass and everything kind of like bending and bushes snapping and things like that. And then this gigantic rise of water, probably 4 foot rise of water in a matter of like 30 seconds. And it was so strong, we couldn't walk into the current to get out of the culvert. So we had to go with the current into the, like out of the culvert and like unload into this deep part of the creek and then swim too. Dude, it was scary as shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy when it happens that fast too. That like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
What do the trout do? Okay. So for those of you guys who don't know, Pierce here is a trout guide in Wisconsin and Iowa, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Aside from some other things, but when there's a flash major flood, and you know how some of those trout streams are in Northeast Iowa, Southwest Wisconsin, where it's like steep on both sides. Yep. And so there's not a lot of quote unquote floodplain. Mm-hmm. What are, like when you get all this water, what happens to the trout? Do they just all get pushed downstream?
I just asked one of our fisheries biologists about this on an episode a couple weeks ago, and he basically said that they just figure out where they can hide. I think they just go to the deepest spot where they can kind of get below where all that water's rushing over the top of them. Mm-hmm. And I think they just pin themselves to the bottom or get behind a rock or, you know, a log or whatever it may be, and they just wait it out. Now, I think like survive. A lot of the younger fish, a lot of them, I think, get flushed downstream. Just cause they don't have the strength to withstand it. But man, some of these creeks too, I've seen it where, you know, you look at where the, you know, when a creek floods, you look at all the debris that's like kind of stranded and strung across the tree branches and stuff. There's a few of them, like it's nothing for a creek to shoot up like 9-10 feet and then just drop back down in a matter of hours. Like it's the weirdest
thing.
That
blows my mind, man. That blows my mind. And, in some of those spots I've been not necessarily up in those trout streams, but, in some river bottom ground where I've been, turkey hunting or mushroom hunting, or even during the summer months where there maybe is a flood, and you see like all of the corn stalks get pushed against a certain part. And then you look up in a tree that's maybe 2 or 3 feet above my head. And there's like all this grass that's been caught in there, corn stalks and like other trees. And you're like, holy shit, that water is brutal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, good luck getting out of that.
Yeah. Have you noticed that weather forecasts seem to be just about worthless these days? Like, I don't know if they're just starting to like use AI too much or use too much like computer generated stuff to generate these forecasts. But dude, my forecasts have been absolute garbage. Like last night, up until the storm hit, it said we were going to get like 0.03 inches of rain or something.
Yeah.
And it was going to last like an hour. And then we got basically a tornado.
Well, I don't know what news station you're listening to, but I got a secret in my pocket, and his name is Mark Snackenberg from KWWL. Shout out Mark Snackenberg, because he does a really good job of telling the truth when it comes to the weather and some of the other meteorologists at KWWL. So shout out KWWL for getting it right at least 80% of the time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So that might be my issue. I'm going off the apps. I'm not,
don't go off the apps. Yeah. They don't like Mark Snackenberg, dude. He's not gonna, I know him well enough where I call him Big Snack. Right. Mm-hmm. So I just go, yo, Big Snack, what's it going to be like today? And then he tells me, of course, I don't have his phone number or really know him. I just watch him every morning or every day on TV in the afternoon.
Got him DVR'd.
I got a DVR. Yeah. Big Snack. What up? Tell me the weather. And then he tells me it's been fairly accurate. It's been fairly accurate so far.
Hell yeah.
But I tell you what, today, man, makes me want to, I got this dumbass knee that I need to, that I'm trying to get better, but dude, I want to be outside today. It's gorgeous out right now.
Yeah, dude, for sure. Yeah, I was, had we not gotten that rain, I ended up having to call off the attack and reschedule today and tomorrow's guide trips. And the good news with that is I now get to go turkey hunting tomorrow morning. So I'm Amen. Pretty fired up about that. So,
isn't it supposed to rain tomorrow morning, though?
Not tomorrow morning. I mean,
maybe. We need, depends on what app you're using.
Yeah, phone in the big snack and let me know. Because right now it said the morning's open, but the afternoon is supposed to get dumped on.
Yeah, dude, you got to go get, you got to go watch Channel 7.
Yep.
And just watch what Big Snack says tonight. So before we get into any more of this nonsense, though, here's what I will say is the last time you were on, we talked about poop for an hour and 15 minutes. So we're not going to do that again. We're going to find something else to talk about. I don't really care what we talk about, but I want to send a huge shout out to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you're looking for a broadhead that just destroys, go check out wasparchery.com. They have the mechanicals, they have the fixed blades. Most of their heads are manufactured still in the United States of America. That's a big win. And that would be wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code, and that is NFC20 for 20% off. Go check that out. Vortex Optics. Do you have a red dot on your turkey gun?
I do not. No.
You need to get a Vortex Optics red dot on your turkey gun, Pierce.
I've been looking at them.
Yeah, dude.
They're in my cart. I just haven't pulled the trigger yet.
You got to pull the trigger, dude. They're sick, dude. And they have a lineup of a whole bunch of different red dots for your shot, your turkey shotgun, especially this time of year. There's still time. So go to vortexoptics.com and take a look at their red dots, rifle scopes, their binoculars, spotting scopes, range finders, all of that stuff. Vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense. I'm a huge fan of the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. They have real and synthetic deer attractants and lures. They have, just a variety of different scents that could attract deer closer to your, closer to your location. They also have scent elimination products like body washes, sprays, and shampoos. So go check out codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal. And I'm going to be getting my reveals out, I think, a little bit earlier this year. Usually I do it around July. I feel like I'm missing part of some kind of shift that's happening on one of my farms about June. And I don't know why that is, but I want to try to capture that this year. The antlers aren't, you know, they're halfway grown in June, but I'm going to try to get my, my cameras out about a month earlier this year and see what happens and see if I can gain any knowledge out of that. But go check out tacticam.com/cameras and check out all of the cameras that Reveal offers along with their app, right? You can download the Reveal app anywhere that apps can be downloaded, and go check out all the new functionality that they've updated since like 1 year ago. So it's pretty badass. So tacticam.com/cameras. And then I think that's it. Other than that, I think everybody should go buy a Full Sneak Gear t-shirt. I think right now I'm running a 2-for-1 special. So go buy 2 t-shirts for 1. I suck at marketing my own company. I don't know why.
It feels like, weird, doesn't it?
I know. It's like I'm whoring out, but you know, like with all the other companies, I'm real into it. I do it. And then it's like, oh, I have a company too. Maybe buy a t-shirt. It's mm-hmm. cool. All right. That's
yep.
it.
Dude.
FullSneakGear.com.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Here's a question I wanted to ask you. Unless, do you have a question? Do you have any topics that you were thinking of today?
Man, I got turkeys on the brain right now. We just did our Wisconsin Youth Weekend. I think it was Iowa's Youth Weekend
this past weekend
too, right? And yeah, dude, we had some close calls, had a handful of birds come up and gobble in our face that just never separated and gave us a shot. But roosted one Saturday night and then got in there Sunday morning and almost made it happen. But my mentees, we were kind of in the CRP field and they mow the perimeter of it.
Yep.
And we were in this lone tree on the tip of this draw. And I didn't realize that my mentee's feet were sticking out onto the path and he just had like rubber boots on it this time.
Oh no.
Was working with us and he flew straight down and he's like, my mentee's like, oh, I can see him. I can see him. I'm like, really? And I kind of stick my head up and I can see it too. And I watch this bird walk up onto this little knoll like 70 yards away and turn around and walk right back down into the woods.
And it just because of those black pair of boots, right?
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude. How old was the kid?
13.
13, okay. Was this his first year of turkey hunting?
Yeah. Yeah.
How, like, what program are you hooked up with?
This was through our, the DNR did this one in kind of conjunction with our, Wisconsin Backcountry Hunters and Anglers chapter. So our R3 coordinator was, kind of leading the charge on that and just recruited me and we were able to get up there and make it happen. Dude.
Nice.
That was fun.
And so you went up to Wisconsin for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. And that was that the closest call or did you get some more to gobble and respond to you?
Dude, we were driving around and we saw this one, we're right on the edge of this public and we saw one longbeard as we drove by. So I was like, great, we'll turn around, drove back behind it. And as we drove back the other way to go back and set up back on the public, we realized that it was not one longbeard, but we had three of them, two jakes and three hens with us. And they were all pretty much just working up this boundary line, essentially up this hill. So I real quick pulled off, we hopped out, ran up through this draw, got set up kind of on this really long bench, and it almost like stepped its way up into like several like smaller benches as it got closer and closer to the top of this. And me being paranoid about a bird getting up above us, I was like, well, let's set up on this little rise that's like 3 feet higher than the really long flat bench. And I set my mentee up and we're up on this little rise, threw some decoys out, like just up on top of this little clearing on the bench that we were on. Yeah. And then I dropped down to the lower bench, called immediately, got them hammering back at us and, the hens were yelping. And so we're going back and forth a bunch and ran back to the tree, could hear them coming up. They were gobbling and clucking and yelping and all that stuff. And, basically they all came up and at like 37 yards or so, I could see the top half of one of the tom's fans fully strutted out. And then a jake came up, stood up on top of this deadfall, and the tom came up behind him. And about, I knew there were a pile of birds back behind him because I could hear him rustling around. And we got close. They were at like 35 at that point or 34 or so. And I wanted to have him just absolutely dust that jake, but that tom was kind of behind him. And then the tom never came up any further and they were all looking pretty dang hard. And then they just kind of slowly trickled back down the hill and never gave us a crack.
So a couple of them came up top to investigate and then they didn't see it. Did you have decoys out?
We had two decoys out. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if they just saw us. We didn't have that much cover because I thought we were close enough that we'd be able to, as soon as they peek up towards the top, we'd be able to smoke one. But
yeah,
I didn't think they'd all come up that that congregated. So
yeah, my boy went out this past weekend with my stepdad. Obviously, because of my knee surgery, I'm not able to navigate the woods quite yet. I'm hoping that the last week of the season, I'm going to be able to go and make something happen. Full green up, full, like basically the hardest conditions to kill a turkey in. But I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing if, because I think on the farms that I hunt, like I don't even think anybody hunts third season. So first and second, somebody hunts. Third season, I don't think anybody hunts. And then fourth season, I mean, it's hard to hunt. And so I don't think anybody's there doing that. So I might try to get everybody, down to, my main farm and, try to get it done May, like the last week of the season in May. So I'm on a slippery slope, one because of the knee and the other is because not this weekend, but then the next two weekends we have baseball tournaments. So and I can't wait for that to happen because all of our practices have been rained out so far. And so we're going into a tournament with literally no practice. And so
we're just like
the pitchers are just going to be launching balls all over the place. And so I'm looking forward to starting the baseball. I'm to be honest with you, I'm just looking to get this fucking knee fixed, like rehabbed. And get moving. It's crazy. Like I'm not sleeping at night. It's driving me bananas, man. But that's it, man. My, My son went out so far with grandpa, and they got close ish. But then they ran into a lot of hunting pressure, and they didn't want to move in on other people. And didn't want to move in on anybody and kind of stay out of other people's way. And cause they were hoping that people would do that to them, and it never really paid off. And then we had a scenario where the couple strutters came in, from what they told me, down in this pasture, and then out of the timber comes a horse. And, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I love horses. My grandpa owned a horse farm, a lot of memories with horses, but the two most recent memories I have with horses are scaring a 6-year-old buck away from me. I rattled in this buck. I saw him down in the river bottom. I rattled at him. He came on a rope to me, but you know what else came on a rope to me? A horse. When I rattled, the horse came in to investigate, and that buck stayed outside of this horse. And I've never wanted to put an arrow through a horse more than that day. and then my son, they had the decoys out, and he's like, those turkeys were coming right in. And then that, my son, he's pissed, and he goes, that damn horse, like, that damn horse came in and scared the turkeys away. And I was like, yeah, buddy, it happens out there. That horse is like 25 years old. And so I think it's just there used to be 13 of them. Mm-hmm. And now that horse is the only one left.
A lone survivor.
And I'm just hoping he dies soon. Right. So, you know, I don't even know if they take care of him anymore, to be honest with you. I think mm-hmm. he just lives out in that pasture. And they put a salt block out every year, and he just eats whatever he can in the area. And then when the horses die, they just die where they're at. And then nature takes its course. And then you walk around the farm, and there's horse bones all over the place.
Dude, it's unsettling. Like, it's weird. Like, something just a little strange. We got a farm like that out here too. Has a couple of dead horses, a handful of dead cows. And like, when you stumble upon them, it's like, the bones are so big. It's like, is this like a ritual site? Like, what the hell exactly happened?
That we also have pile of like, there's this little tiny draw, because the landowner raises goats too. And when a goat dies, she puts it in the bucket of a tractor, and then she takes it to this little draw and dumps it. And so it's just like 35 years of dead goats bones in this. It's like, it would be like imagine like an Indian burial site coming up on that. It's like, oh my God, why are there so many dead goats here? Yeah. And I guess that's just where the landowner decides to put all their dead goats. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you other than it's a unique farm with a lot of,
it's got character.
It's got character. Exactly. Exactly. All right. I got to switch topics, because this is something that I've been thinking about recently and hearing recently, and the term hunting pressure comes, you know, it comes from public land. I hunt a farm. This farm that I just was talking about has hunting pressure. I'm part of the hunting pressure. There's other guys who hunt, you know, firearm season, turkey season, mushrooms, like whatever, people are on it. Right. And so, I want to talk a little bit about hunting pressure today. What happens when you encounter, and I want you to maybe use your public land experience from these past couple of years, and talk a little bit about, like, what do you do when you run into somebody?
Dude, I've been very fortunate that in the past couple of years, I've ran into, I think, like 3 or 4 people. So I think a big part of that is I have done a lot of my public land hunting. I've been fortunate and flexible with my schedule that I've been able to do it during the week, so I can avoid the crowds quite a bit. When I have run into people, it's been usually like in the parking lot and on the hike out. Like, I haven't really had any issues aside from one of the guys who I ran into in the parking lot, told me where he was going to go, told him I was going to hunt the next draw over. He makes more noise than I think I've heard just about anybody on public land make getting set up. Waits about
just like a ton of clinks and clanks.
Oh,
and like,
yeah, dude.
Falling tree branches. Stands.
Yep, exactly. And then about half an hour later, I hear like a thud like a tree stand, like a clank, like a seat falling maybe or something like that. And it goes quiet for another like 5-10 minutes or so. Then I hear something coming through the woods kind of to my left. And so I'm thinking, well, this is like right on the outside of this bedding area. So I grab my bow and I'm getting ready. And I quickly see that it's not a deer, but it's a guy, that guy. And he gets into about 35, 40 yards and he takes off his stand and he takes off his jacket and he takes off his saddle.
Yep.
And I'm like, this guy's about to take a dump right in front of me. Yep. And something like I didn't whistle or holler at him or anything like that.
You just watched.
Maybe him. I should have. But something.
You freak.
Something.
You freak.
Oh, hold on now. Something intervened. Like God reached down and nudged this guy. And for whatever reason, he just decided this isn't the spot.
Okay.
And he grabbed all his stuff and he put it back on and he just kept on going. So I don't know if he just had like one of those like, I know we said we're not going to talk about poop on this podcast. I don't know if he had one of those like cold sweats emergency type things. Yep. Like early on, the morning coffee was just cooking through him and then it finally settled. Yep. Or what. But yeah, he that's the only negative interaction I've really had on public land. Now, when I actually encounter other people's stuff, I typically make note of it. Now, a lot of times, like usually it's like a tree stand. I found quite a few mock scrapes this year. It was one that was kind of awesome, actually. It had like off the same oak limb, he had the natural oak branch. And then with a piece of twine, like a foot to the right of that, he had a cedar branch. And then with another piece of twine, like a foot to the right of that, he had a rope hanging down. So he had like all three options sitting there right there, like 20 yards from his ladder stand that he'd hung up there. None of them were touched, but about 8 yards further on this scrubby little like maple tree, there was a scrape that was like 4 feet in diameter on the ground. The whole thing was just twisted and ripped off. And so I don't know. I usually just make note of where people are at. And as soon as I figure out that somebody's got a stand in here, somebody's got, you know, whether it be a ladder stand or a hang on or to leave some climbing sticks or whatever it may be, usually I just take note of that. Like same with cameras and everything and do what I can to avoid that. Cause I'm going to assume, especially like during peak times of the season, like that area is probably seeing quite a bit of pressure. And so usually what I'm going to do is just drop a pin, maybe use like the radius feature on Onyx or something to kind of give myself like, I don't know, 60, 70 yard bubble around that just to kind of write those areas off. Just from my own personal experience of hunting the same tree over and over for how many years, out at the home farm, it seems like 70 yards or so is like the bubble that they decide they like, okay, that area is messed up, but we're good over here. Like we're still getting where we need to go. They're still moving within like the close proximity, but they know they're out of harm's way or they're in like thicker, nastier type stuff, or they're going through there at night. Right. And so usually I'm avoiding those areas and then trying to figure out like throughout kind of with the gap and the radius bubbles, like where's the open area that doesn't seem to be tampered with. And then I focus more of my energy and time on that type of stuff.
Summer is officially here. And you know what that means? Long late nights by the grill, weekends at the lake, and hitting the golf course with your buddies. And nothing elevates those perfect summer moments quite like a premium cigar. Whether you're pairing a rich Murado with a cold bourbon after a backyard barbecue or enjoying a smooth smoke on the porch at sunset, Thompson Cigar has you covered. They've been America's humidor since 1915, offering the absolute best selection and prices. Because they have one of the largest humidors in the country, your cigars are guaranteed fresh and delivered straight to your door. If you want to try something new, check out their unique 5-pack fever deals or their value clubs for unbeatable savings and expert curation. Use my code NFC at checkout for up to 20% off your orders of $75 or more. Or visit thompsoncigar.com/NFC and the discount will be automatically applied. Some exclusions may apply. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/chronicles and use NFC25 for 25% off your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. What do your interactions with other hunters look like out there? Like, what kind of information do you share with them? What kind, like, are you telling them specific spots? Are you being blunt? Like, I'm hunting here. I'm going to be hunting here tomorrow. Like, are you that forward with them, or how do you
try to ask as many questions as I can? And dive, like, not that I'm trying to be sneaky or anything like that, but like, I try and just ask them as many questions as possible. And like, maybe I'll say, like, if they say they're going to hunt this certain area, be like, oh yeah, dude, I saw a good buck over there. Or, you know, I've seen a bunch of turkeys over there or whatever.
Yeah.
Just try and like encourage their plan. Sounds great. I know where you're going.
Yeah.
I'm going to avoid that area typically. Or else, you know, occasionally I'll say, usually I try to beat them to the punch of like, hey, where are you going? I just don't want to step on your toes or anything.
Yeah.
And you know, from there, kind of develop a game plan from there. If they're super open, usually I'll be pretty open too.
Right.
And just say like, cool, I'm going to go vaguely, you know, the next point over, you know,
yeah,
a couple ridges over.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're kind of letting them make the decision and then you work around wherever they're going to go.
Yep. Exactly.
Right. Have you ever had a scenario play out where it's like you were there, you know, you're hunting, maybe you, I don't know, you located a buck and you know where he's moving, and then you run into someone and they're going to the same place that you're trying to go.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever, have you ever been like, hey dude, I'm going there. That's where I'm going. So I understand it's public.
No, because I don't want to tip them off that I'm like that hell bent on it. Like if it's that good, I don't want them to know that I'm like chomping at the bit to go for it. I want them to know like, okay, like sure, go do your thing. That's cool. Like I'm going to just avoid, I'll go somewhere else. Cause not to sound egotistical, but like I'm hunting that buck in my own way and kind of going off of like whatever knowledge I've gained.
Yeah.
In that time period. So if I haven't seen anybody there or seen that guy there in the time that I've been hunting there, there's a good chance he's going in kind of just on a hunch or on last year's information or something, I think. And then, you know, my hope is that he either bumps that deer a little bit or, you know, something happens that he doesn't get an arrow in it. And then maybe the next time I go in, I can, you know, figure something out from there. But
so you're conceding at that point, you're letting him go to it. Yeah, man. I've always felt like that's been like my public land thing is where like, oh, you're going here. All right. I'll go find somewhere else. Like, because usually nobody wants to concede and it just becomes easier for me to, now if I'm already in the tree, like when I used to hunt public land way more and I was already in the tree, I would wave guys down so they would see me and most of them would turn around and walk the other direction.
Right.
Yeah. But then you run into those guys where they're just like, hey, it's public land. I'm going to set up wherever I want. If it's the next tree over from you, that's where I'm going to set up. And so, I've had to run into those guys and I've sure as shit had to tear down those sets and go try to find someplace else. It just, I just feel like nobody wins when there's somebody when like you either have to concede or you try to argue with someone, then nobody's going to win. You know what I mean?
Yep, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so I don't know. That's why whenever, like, especially for mule deer and out West is a different story because there's so much more public land to bounce around on. If I've seen a guy, you just walk, you know, you walk one section line over and it's brand new territory, you know, a brand new habitat, for everything. In Iowa, it's not necessarily the case because a lot of public land, especially where I live, is only access, like is road access. And then it kind of goes down to a river. So unless you have a boat, You have to start at the road and work your way in. And so everybody, you can't park on the road. You gotta, or, you know, cause the ditches are kind of steep. So the public land by me, there's like four parking lots and they all have, you know, trucks in them. And a lot of guys will get in there real early, to try to get their spot and kind of wait to, and win that way. Right. So if you're late to the game, it's kind of over in the mornings.
Yeah, definitely. But I, you know, there's something to be said too, I think, for like, you know, taking note of like when you find those lots that are absolutely packed and not being afraid. And like, I don't know, turkey season's prime time to do that, I think, because you've got, you know, everybody wants to get in, find those gobblers on the roost and figure it out and try and kill one first thing in the morning. Like that's what everybody like wants to do, right? Especially if they're roosted the night before. I don't know about you. I suck at killing birds off the roost. And so if I can just buzz around and see what areas are getting a ton of pressure and slip in there mid morning, maybe after the parking lots are starting to clear out a little bit, or especially like, you know, going in there like around noon or like early afternoon, dude. Cause I mean, you get a bird to gobble, that bird's probably coming, you know, at that point in the day. And so, you know, I've had a lot of success doing that in the springtime, and I'll try and do that kind of throughout the deer season a little bit as well. Like if even if a lot's full, just kind of slowly, you know, almost still hunt my way in and just kind of watch and listen and look for guys hiking out. Cause a lot of times they're kicking something up. They're going to bump something on their way in and out.
Yeah. That's not a bad strategy. And that way you don't have to wake up at 4 a.m.
Oh, totally.
To go get it. Yeah. To go get it.
You feel guilty. Like your skin starts to crawl and the alarm goes off, but yeah.
Right. When it comes to like that strategy specifically, especially for like turkey hunting, I guess it would play for turkey. It would play for whitetails. And you mentioned like middle of the week or weekday hunting when a majority of people, do you ever lay off of the weekends then? And totally. Only, oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of
times
it's
that, it's that big of a difference.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, especially like, I mean, on the pieces that I've hunted in Iowa as well as Wisconsin. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, you know, now that COVID's kind of over and done with and everybody's back to work and there's, you know, that couple of years there was one thing where, you know, people had more flexible schedules and they could do all that different stuff and show up in the middle of the week. But I think the number of public land, like week long rutcationers, is so much fewer than I think social media or maybe even podcasts leads people to believe. And especially if you're hunting like a smaller piece of public and like you pick some of those ones that are, you know, maybe it's a 40, maybe it's like a 200 or even like a 600 or something like that, but it doesn't have to be that, you know, 1300 acre piece that draws, you know, you can see it when you're all the way zoomed out, you know, on a state and on Onyx or whatever. But especially those smaller pieces that are, you know, maybe they're kind of a pain in the butt to get into. Now you'll deal with more local pressure with those ones for sure. Yeah. But again, I think that local pressure for the most part comes on the ends of the weeks, if not the weekends. And especially like give me like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, dude.
Yeah.
All day. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I always thought it would have been great because I hunted public land before I had the podcasting gig, right? So I was a 9-to-5er. I was a 7-to-3:30er. And that was my, you know, that was my hours for the week, you know, 5 days a week. And I always thought, dude, Monday morning or Tuesday, let the timber sit a day and then go in like Tuesday, Wednesday. That would be awesome to go hunt public on a Tuesday and a Wednesday in late October, or maybe not the rut because just driving around here, like it's loaded all week, like the first and second week in November. But then the third, like the week leading up to that, the last week of October and the third week of November, it kind of goes back to a ghost town again.
Yep.
On the weekdays, but everybody's hunting the weekend still. So I don't know, man.
I think it's that the old Field and Stream 7 best days of the rut that's been going out for however long. Like, dude, I think that thing is.
You think people take that really serious?
Dude, I remember I wish that I still took it as seriously as I did, man, because I remember chomping at the bit and reading that thing religiously every year when I was in like middle school and high school, and just the excitement that I had when it would say like November 2nd this year, this is when it's going to happen. It's going to be like
rut, that final full moon, whatever.
And I was like, great, I'm going to be in the tree. And I just like have that, you know, bias in my head going into it. And there were a couple of years it was awesome. There were other years that on November 2nd, I saw like three deer and that was it. But
Man. Has hunting pressure ever forced you to do something that you normally wouldn't do, but then because you did it, you were like, it had kind of a light switch moment and you're just like, oh shit, this is awesome. And I'm going to do more of this.
Dude, water access for sure.
Explain that.
It's a pain in the ass and nobody wants to do it, but hop on Facebook Marketplace, find yourself a little kayak or a cheap beat up canoe or something. Doesn't have to be fancy, but something that ideally I think 14 feet's the max, because anything bigger than that, it's a pain in the butt to lift and either throw on top of your vehicle or stick out the bed of your truck or something like that. But if you can find like a 10 to 12 foot canoe or a kayak or something like that, that you can handle easily, that you can still fit a deer in. Dude, like you said, the number of properties that are, you know, road access, big steep hill or whatever, and then it winds down into a, you know, a river bottom or something.
Yeah.
Or even if you don't want to get a boat, go to Farm and Fleet. Frog Togs makes a pair of waders, like hip waders, like the single leg, like look like chaps kind of. I want to say they're like $40. And most, like, maybe don't test it right now while everything's chugging, but like in July or August when we're kind of in that, you know, late season, like most of the rain showers that we get throughout the year have gone through, go out there and just find those crossing areas. Most of them you can spot from Onyx. You'll see a little island or something, or you'll see, you know, even just like the sandbars or something move. Now pay attention, because like depending on what the bottom of that river is, like, you know, sandy rivers will shift on you a little bit and that bottom changes. But dude, most of that stuff, especially in the dark, water psychs so many people out, because they're, if they're not familiar with it, if they're not in it all the time, they haven't been there before, it's just testing a theory, like they don't want to go hip deep through a river in the dark carrying their bow and their tree stand and all that stuff in an area that they think might be crossable, you know what I mean? And so even if it's just a canoe, or sometimes even just like, you know, knee-high rubber boots or something, but like a pair of hip waders that you can just fold up and stuff in your pack or carry along with you or something, dude, that is like so invaluable to just get into those annoying spots that 95% of the people either don't have the gear for or don't have the desire to do themselves. Like,
it, and you're all about that now. You're all about water access. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
man. I'll tell you what, I've found so many good, spots scouting. If I had a little canoe or a boat, man, and I don't ever do it because it just, I don't know. Maybe I should. Maybe I should just bite the bullet and do it on a private piece, come in from the back door, and float this little creek in back into the, in there. And dude,
so I showed my buck this year.
Yeah, I know. I know. And so like finding that water access and backdooring all of that, I just feel like you get in, because they're not thinking about the like pressure coming in from the water. They're just not, dude. I found this little, now I think I might have mentioned this in a podcast maybe 5 years ago, but I was doing some scouting, some like in August. And so I went out and I was scouting on public, looking for deer trails and river crossings and things like that. And I found this little bend in the river where this guy would come in and he would park a boat. You can see where he would put a boat in. The dude had a trail camera and he had a food plot on public land. He planted a clover food plot on public land, and he pulled some, I don't know where he put his boat in, but he got in there, got out of his boat, walked maybe 15 yards to his tree stand from the boat. And he sat in there with a trail camera and with a food plot. And, the guy got, I'm pretty sure the, I don't know if the guy got in trouble. I don't know if they ever found out who it was, but the food plot got taken out. Right. But yeah, man, it was, like, I don't know, man. I feel like I need to start taking better advantage of water access.
Dude, it's fun, man. Like, I don't know it that like half of it for me is just like, it gives you a little bit more of that like adventure aspect. Like you're, you know, floating down the creek or down the river, and then you can still hop up and down the bank and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, it's just fun, right? Yeah. Like,
have you ever ran into a scenario on public? I mean, it happened to me on private, but where there was an arrow already sticking out of a deer.
I have not had that happen yet. No.
Yeah. Yeah. A handful of years ago, I was in a tree, and there was a crossbow bolt that was sticking out of this very young buck's backstrap. And I was just like, holy shit. And he was walking around fine. It was above the spine, so he more than likely was going to be okay. But I've seen arrows from trail camera pictures. I saw that encounter once, but not very many. I see some wounded deer, but it's hard to tell if it's because of a bow. But I don't know. I was just kind of curious if you'd ever seen anything like that.
No, more so during gun season, I'll see a deer that's got a leg hanging off, or, you know, some big knot in its fur from either from bow season or from gun season, whatever it may be. But
yeah,
no, bow season, I don't know if it's just because I'm setting up in more thick stuff typically by that time of year.
Probably.
It's just so much foliage, I don't see them. But
when you decide whether that's the hunting pressure that forces you to do the water access. So hunting pressure forced you to do water access, which you then realized water access is awesome. And so is that like now a main theme of your public land strategy every year?
I'm always looking for it. Like if I can find a spot that I want, like that either just has good water access, or maybe a spot that you look at the map and you can kind of pick out those areas that are just isolated where you might just need that to get into one of those spots. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And when you use water access, have you been seeing less people?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Now, occasionally you'll think, like, I've had it this past year where I thought I was really clever and I was like, I'm going to take the river down through this spot, or I'm going to wade across it, and I'm going to pop up on this little oxbow. And then I got into this one and it was accessible by a really long margin on the other side. And I got down into that oxbow and it was just like littered with ladder stands and rope scrapes and all that crap. But
yeah,
found a couple others that were much, much more open, much more untouched.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you scouting? Like, are you done scouting for the year? When do you pick back up scouting again?
Usually I'll get back. I mean, I'll scout all the way through the end of turkey season typically.
While you're turkey hunting?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if I don't like sitting still too much while I'm turkey hunting. So if I'm covering ground, I'm usually walking a deer trail or looking for sign, all that stuff. I'll typically start usually about first or second week of September. I'll start actually kind of poking around the woods a little bit more and just see if there's any open scrapes already. Especially like early season rubs. Do I capitalize on early season opportunity very often? No, but
yeah. When do you jump in to the timber to actually, like, are you waiting for that late October timeframe, that November peak, or are you always looking? Like, are you ready if something popped up on camera or whatever the case is?
I'm ready, but usually my calendar just dictates with Wisconsin's trout season running until October 15th. Usually it's jam packed up until the very end. And, you know, occasionally I'll get out, usually like late September and stuff in Wisconsin, I'll get out. I try to get out opening weekend and smack a doe at the very least or something, start filling the freezer and knock the rust off a little bit there. But yeah, usually it's not till that third week of October that things finally start to open up. And then we're kind of in that late October lull time frame a little bit, and then after that start going into the pre-rut and hit hard.
Yeah. I think this year, man, I'm gonna say it out loud, but then I bet you I do it anyway, but I don't think I'm gonna coach football this year. for the first time in like, I don't even know, it'd be like, 5 years, 5 or 6 years. I've coached football, multiple teams. Last year I coached my son's team, both my son's football teams. And I know my son, my younger son wants to play. We call it flackle here where it's flag football, but you wear your pads. You wear all the pads to get them used to the pads.
Okay.
And so, it's still full contact blocking, all that stuff. But, it kind of sucks because it takes up so much of the fall. Mm-hmm. And if I commit to it, like this year, I'm not going on a Western hunt because of my knee, but, I know my older son, he doesn't want to play football this year. And I'm thinking, man, why not just take him hunting more? You know what I mean? Like get him out in the tree with me and let's go bounce around the woods. So teach him how to hunt basically. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I don't want to coach football, but I bet I do. You know yep. what I mean? Like, is what it is. Because then usually it's around the 24th, 5th or 6th is when the season's over. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I start hitting it hard. I'm still in that mode where I'm doing, Halloween with the kids.
Yep.
And then I break off for the next 2 weeks to try to get something done. So, that's what I do. That's my mini strategy in a given year. But outside of that, man, good conversation today. Yeah. Quick one.
Let me ask you this, dude.
Yeah, go for it.
Do you miss hunting public land? Like, is there anything that you miss about it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
What is it?
It is the constant sense of unsure. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I get a little bit of it on private ground where you're like, yeah, these are good spots. You know, you really don't know what's going to come through. But the thing about public is, man, there's so many variables that you can do it way right. You can do it way wrong. And you can just get lucky too, you know, or you can just, you know, think you're in the perfect spot and have some guy walk by you at prime time coming out of the woods, right? Yep. You're like, oh my God, what are you doing? I feel like in the next, I'm going to get this knee taken care of. I feel, to be honest with you, in the next 5 years, I'm probably going to start hunting more public.
Hell yeah.
around Iowa, and not necessarily for big antlers, but just like I'm going through a phase of my life where I want to see if I still got it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Sure.
And I cut my teeth doing the run and gun thing, and I want to see if I can still do it, dude. And, so I think I'm going to try to do like it here in the near future. I think I'm going to start running and gunning more. I think I'm going to want to hop on some public that I've never hunted before, look for pockets, all the skills that I've taught myself over the years, and almost test myself. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Dude, I love that.
Especially early season when if I'm not coaching football, I got some private or public ground, you know, close to my house. Might as well just go stomp on it for a while. There's a reservoir fairly close that has Cora engineer ground all around it. Yep. Might as well go stomp on that. Go sit under a pine tree and just kind of see what shows up. You know what I mean? So,
totally. Yeah, dude, I love that idea.
Yeah.
That'll be a blast. I'll be really curious to see like how efficient you are out there. Yeah, like with all the years of hunting that you got under your belt now and like doing the public thing, doing the private thing, like I'll be super curious to see like how fast you feel like you like pick through a property and like isolate the good stuff and all that.
Yeah, that will be the hardest part because I think I'm going to have to go back to the scouting hardcore during shed season.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like March, go look for sheds, but you know, scour some public and look for old scrapes, old rubs, thickness, like heavy trails, all that stuff, water crossings, creek crossings, and just go document it. And, I don't know, see what's up.
Yeah, definitely. So like that's the toughest part, man, is the documentation, and striking that balance of not dropping a pin on every piece of sign that you see, but also making sure you got enough detail in there that you're still telling a good story, but
absolutely,
yeah, dude, I love
absolutely.
It.
So a lot's gonna, you know, I got a lot of life and a lot of hunting left to do. And, I think there's a little part of me that doesn't want to give up on the hardcoreness of the run and gun mentality quite yet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Dude, but, once you got that knee ironed out, you're feeling good again, man. You're going
okay.
You're gonna be a dangerous man, I feel like.
I'm going to tell you this. I was at Bible study today, and I was talking to my preacher, and we were talking about the knee and kind of how it sucks, and I haven't been sleeping and all this stuff. And the one thing that this has made me realize is how blessed that I am to be as mobile as I am, right? Like, there's people out there that are not doing well in life, right? They're, maybe they have some health issues. Maybe they're obese. Maybe they lost a leg or they have a major injury or something like that. And all this has made me want to do is rehab my knee as fast as humanly possible and then get out of this stage of my life and put the fucking gas pedal down. Yep. Because I want to, like, it, I just want to start living life again, like a better version of what I was before I had this. I don't know. It's kind of triggered me in a way.
Yeah, totally.
So,
dude, I had a feeling that was the case. Yeah, yeah. Just knowing how you're wired, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you forget how good it can be.
It's
like when you got a like nasty cold for a really long time and you're like, you forget how good it feels to just like breathe normally.
Breathe normal. Like, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Here we go. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I just want to walk again.
Yeah.
Walk and then start, you know, putting some weight on my back and start, you know, humping through the streets here and get, you know, get ready for next year's mule deer season and all that stuff. I just want to get going get coaching again and get outside. And what really pisses me off is not necessarily missing turkey season, but not being able to get to my favorite mushroom spots, dude. Like I know there's going to be mushrooms out there that are just turning into raisins right now because I'm not picking them. And it kind of pisses me off a little bit. So, so there's that.
But send me a pen.
Yeah. I might just do it, but if I send you the pin, you got to let me cook them at my house. You can come eat them.
Deal.
But, all right, dude. Hey, Pierce, man, I appreciate you. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day. We'll be on again in the near future. And, to everybody who's listening, please do me a favor. Why don't you go to iTunes or Spotify, wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles, make sure you're subscribed, leave a 5-star review. This is also on YouTube. So if you want to watch this version of Pierce sitting in what looks like a nice studio and me laying down with my head, I look like a slob right now in this footage.
Very comfortable.
Yeah, very comfortable. My head's back like I'm half drunk or something, but that's how it is right now. So go subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles YouTube channel. Other than that, man, good vibes, everybody. Have a good rest of your week. This is a Friday episode. This is going to come out on Friday. So Fridays are awesome. Enjoy your life and we'll talk to you next time.